You are listening to Let's Go, the weekly anime podcast about weekly anime from Dynamite in the Brain and Secret of the Sailor Madness. So come along and hang with the Let's Go gang. Dwayne.
Hello.
Niall.
Good morning.
Oh, he had me frightened there. And me, Brian. This week, we are talking about the anime that aired from the 22nd of May to the 28th of May, with a single exception of Bono Bono, which we're talking probably 13 weeks ago. So let's start with that Monday's anime, The Laughing Salesman, Episode 8, The Man Chased by His Dreams, / Mustache Taxi. Not about the company Lyft. Lyft, they're like the rival to Uber, who aren't as evil as Uber.
Yeah.
And their thing is, you know Lyft drivers because they have a mustache which they attach to the front of their cars.
Oh. I just thought it was a good name for a band.
It is also a good name for a band. It's also a good name for a Laughing Salesman episode. I'm now fully on Moguru's side. It's like starting this show.
Initially, but at the start of this, both these guys, I was like, they're not really doing anything bad, but they like fuck it up so quick.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing to do with the people he's picking on. It's just,
oh, right.
He has ingratiated himself with me over those 8 episodes.
You would admire how much of a bastard he is.
He straight up gets a guy killed in the first story.
That's the implication. I mean, like I say implication, but yeah, pretty much. That guy's dead. Stabbed.
Yeah. I thought these 2 episodes, storyboarded by the same guy, and I think they both look really great. I think the first one looks probably the best. Maybe it's taking more shots directly from the comic.
Yeah, and I think the problem with the second one is most of the shots are from in the interior of a cab. But so you get less creative angles.
But there are those great things of how Moguru appears to him each time.
Yes, exactly. Yes. So they put some thought into like just camera, yeah.
So the first one is a guy can't sleep. He's being chased by these hands. I was like, oh, it's JoJo's all over again.
He's a screenwriter. Yeah, I was thinking that. That must be like a Japanese thing. He's a screenwriter, not a salesman or...
Salaryman.
What's the thing at all?
Salaryman,
that's the other
bank
thing.
Clerk.
Moguru meets him out jogging, and what does he offer him? It's like they're not pills, it's not medicine, it's sweets.
Yes.
They're candies.
Yes. Sweet dream candies.
Don't take the rule too many is of you can them. Have one a night.
Yes.
Yeah, you can have one a night and you can't take any more. Which is like, that seems fair enough. It goes pretty well for the guy because he's...
Shows up twice to tell him not to take too many.
Just in case. Yeah.
To plant the idea in his head, I think, more than...
Here's specifically what you shouldn't do. Wink, wink, wink. Yeah.
Yeah, but you would think if a guy hands you a bottle of sweets to clear some kind of, medication, would you just, after a while, can't sleep. We'll have a handful of these. Maybe that'll work. But you wouldn't do that with sleeping pills. So why would you do it with this?
Yeah, I guess because it's not medication. You can't overdose on sweets. You can. It's called
Yes, you
fat.
Can. You definitely can.
You can't overdose quickly on sweets, I guess.
But he wants to spend more time with the woman of his dreams. He keeps on missing out on the end of his dream.
Yeah, coming meeting some woman in his dream from a different anime.
So he takes a bunch and then he doesn't want to marry her in his dream.
I think like she was like the perfect woman for him because she wanted to be his mistress because she knew he was married and she was okay with that. But when he took the handful, it's like, we've kissed now. I can't fucking get married. So you're going to have to dump your wife and go with me. You know, she turned into the crazy girlfriend stereotype. I've forgotten the name for that.
And then he meets Moguru and says, oh, you took too many of those sweets, eh? Well, now you can't escape your dreams anymore. And then the woman has emerged from his dreams, chasing him as he's jogging to get away from his nightmares.
Like, it's literally the nightmare, but without the hands, just a crazy woman with a knife. Yeah. Mm.
And that was the end of the movie he was writing.
I guess that's it. That's how he brought his dreams into reality, because he wrote about it or something. I'm not entirely clear on that.
I think just the taking too many pills sort of made the wall fall down between the real world and his dream world. Mm. And so he got stabbed to death by a dream.
The police are going to have a tough time with that one.
Anyway, part two is much simpler. It's simply a magic mustache, which makes you more confident.
It brings out the confidence within yourself. It's nothing he didn't have. It just lets it fucking loose and wild.
As always, don't use your mustache too much.
Otherwise, you become overly aggressive.
I mean, like, that's just good advice for life.
Yeah. Well, it's more to be like assertive, because the guy's drives a taxi is a complete doormat. So if he gets a difficult customer, they'll just walk out without paying or not paying the right fare.
Or don't walk out at all, in the case of the guy who falls asleep and he goes, well, I better let him wake up on his own time, and turns his
taxi. Well, he wouldn't wake up when he shoved him and stuff. I did like Moguru slightly ruining his life. It's like, oh, we'll just kick him out here. Boom.
He's got it coming. He knew the risk when he put on.
It wasn't the worst way to ruin him. That's why it was such a small don that time. Yeah.
Yeah, we should say when he donned the guy in the first story, a skull also appeared during the don, which I think might be the first time that's happened.
Yeah. Well, I guess death was in the cards for him, so yeah.
Yeah. Which now makes me want to go back and check all the other dons to see if there's like...
There's always some little bit of animation, or he's wearing a different outfit or something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some sort of pattern in the effect which has influences exactly what goes wrong on the people.
Mm.
So this guy is wearing it, helps him out, but then he starts second guessing every customer. It's like first one's like a little old lady, and he goes, well, I can't be too sure. This little old lady might be some trouble.
So just slip the mustache on if she starts causing trouble. I know it'll look ridiculous, but you'll be so confident you won't care. But he's just wearing the mustache all the time when he was told to limit his use of it to only when he needs it.
And he's slowly turning into the guy out of Tekken.
Wario?
No.
Oh. Luigi. Well, Heihachi Mishima.
Yeah. His hair is also turning into like two spikes as well. Yeah. And his mustache is getting longer, obviously.
He's got a long montage of like, you know, when he's getting... more customer. Just like, I'm so sorry about your customer. It can't be helped. I'll pay or get out.
Yeah, the thing is, like, he's like, until he starts getting really, really bad, he's actually quite polite about it. He's like, excuse me, sir. I put out your cigarette in the taxi, that kind of thing, you know.
Sorry about your customer. It can't be helped. Please understand.
Yeah, he's reasonably polite about it.
Yeah, I mean,
until he just goes off the wall.
He still remains polite. He always says, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
In the most aggressive manner possible.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Excuse me, fucker, but please don't smoke in the taxi, you piece of shit.
And then eventually he gets implicated in a bank robbery.
Well, implicated? He became like unwitting, but he's actually the unwanted getaway driver. Yes. It's like, oh, you need to get away real quick, huh? I know a shortcut. And the bank robbers are scared shitless because of the dangerous driving he's doing. Yeah.
You see him on TV and it's like, no, it wasn't me. It was a mustache. The mustache. You would think, buddy. Take him away, toys.
Oh, dear.
And then Margaret is like, oh, I'm sure I'll find out he's innocent in the end.
I know they won't. I'm going to rig the entire trial.
Nothing will teach you to be confident and assertive and keep wits about you more than like 5 to 10 years in prison.
This was the first half of this was the first anime this week where we had a shot from inside a character's mouth.
Oh, and it's inside Moguru's mouth. It's like, oh, Jesus.
I forgot about that. I watched this like last week sometime.
I watched it the same day, so I was like, I had that in mind that was a good shot, and then I wasn't aware that it was going to be topped later on by Shonen Ashibe Gogo Gama-chan episode 39.
Well, I think I'm more terrified to be inside Moguru's mouth.
I think I'd be more terrified of Gama's mouth near me, though. Anxious dental visit, in which all the characters turn up to go to the dentist, apparently. On the same
coincidentally
day.
Everyone has plaque on the same day.
Someone's got an abscess, the teacher
The teacher's just getting one of her checkups, isn't it?
Yeah, the PE teacher, though.
Oh, yeah,
he's got some throbbing abscess on the side of his face. But he doesn't
come up with a genius solution, yeah.
He's taking his mind off it. By having a snapping turtle bite his leg. For how long was it? It was...
2 days.
2 days, that was it. It was far too long.
Was it bite his leg or bite his leg or bite his arse?
It's the other guy's leg.
Oh, yeah, but he gets bit behind the knee. That looks pretty painful. Oh, jeez.
God, this is a good show.
There's no explanation as to how they managed to get an appointment for a seal at a human dentist. But
he used to stare, and he felt left out. And thought, "Well, Gomer Jan is here. Why not give him an examination too?" And the dentist is like, "Yeah, sure. I'm not really trained for this kind of work, but teeth are teeth, I suppose."
The kid whose mum's
Sakaki.
An actor is there.
He's just getting a checkup, yeah, and he's nervous because of the teacher freaking out with her checkup.
The grim-looking guy from the office is there.
Kanji.
Yeah, so he's like,
what was that? Like, raise your left hand if you feel any pain. And obviously, he's like the tough guy, so he's not going to feel any pain. But he does instantaneously when she's just swabbing the area because he's getting bit in the back of the knee by a turtle.
It's like the fact they didn't remove the turtle from the office, and that makes what makes Gomer frightened, so he runs away and then dresses as a nurse in disguise.
I think Ishibi suggests that what's behind the door might be a haunted house.
Yeah, we see all the yokai versions of Gomer.
Oh, dear. Which I think Ishibi and Gomer are having exactly the same vision, but Gomer's terrified by it.
Yes.
Whereas Ishibi's like, that'd be pretty cool.
And for some reason, they've got a seal-sized nurse's uniform at the dentist.
Yeah. Just in case.
Yeah, yeah. You never know when a seal is going to need to disguise himself. Something just fell over. Right. What else happens? Oh, well, then we get the shot.
The teacher makes himself fall asleep.
Oh, that was it, yes.
The PE teacher, I should say.
Yeah, because he's trying to... It's a very...
It's a bunch of puns in a row. The doctor says, I'm going to use anesthetic. And he's like, anesthetic, and he relates it to like a fish. And what if there was another kind of fish?
Yeah, it's different types of carp. And he's like, if another carp came along, then I'd get confused which carp was which.
And he just knocks himself out with that. you have the bully kid.
Sakaki, yeah. Gomer Chan's getting his teeth examined. I bet he's got a pretty cute smile. I'll have a look and tell his big brother. I think he'd be so happy. And then we see Gomer Chan's gaping maw lined with terrifying fangs. But it's a seal, so any one of those.
Yeah, so it gets very photorealistic with their portrayal of Gomer Chan. Which is always funny when they remind you that he's a predator. It's like...
Oh, yeah. He eats meat to live. And he can't bring himself to tell his brother what Goma's teeth are like.
Some things are best left a mystery. And then meanwhile, Yeti's tooth fallen out.
So it's on the bottom jaw, so they have to throw it on a roof?
Yeah, apparently so.
I think that's the thing. And the teacher finally fucking dies. So that's great.
On the third day he'll rise again. Third day, I mean
next week. Yeti throws it way up in the air and it falls back down to earth with great force through the roof, hit the teacher in the head, and everyone's dismayed.
Just kind of collapses backwards on the chair. It's pretty great.
And then Yeti laughs as they're all looking through the window.
I was laughing too. Fuck that guy.
Well, yeah, because up to that point it seemed like an accident, but then the way Yeti reacts.
Yeah, the way he laughed, it was like, you aimed that way, didn't you?
And then we see Ishibe's granddad doing the same with Gomer's tooth.
But he's hired a plane to put it on the roof of like the tallest building in the world or something?
And then there's a fake, a mock Mission Impossible theme going on behind.
Yeah, that was pretty good. And again, it's the combination of high technology, he just launches it with a catapult.
Anyway, that was a tradition I was unaware. And also assume the idea of cavity forming bacteria being devils must also be a thing, because this is the second show after Haybot in recent weeks, which has shown that. Because Gomer's fantasizing about his the bacteria which might cause cavities and their little devils.
I mean, like, that might have been a thing in some advertising.
Yeah,
you
that's
know,
what
like...
I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if you watch that Dragon Dentist movie, that's precisely what it's about. Dragons have plaque, and that makes monsters because the dragon. It's the biggest, evilest monster you can think of.
I forgot to watch that, actually. The name intrigued me, but I never actually watched it in the end.
But that was Gomer Chan this week. Boy, it's a good show.
Yep.
I have to say, of the shorts, it's probably the easiest I recommend for people to get into.
I generally recommend Bono Bono over.
Yeah, but I think those early episodes are kind of a bit.
You start at this one, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Because it kind of throws you in the deep end, assuming that you're familiar with these characters from reading the children's books already.
Yeah.
But what's to get? You know, you got a sea otter and his best friends are a chipmunk and raccoons and dams, and they have philosophical debates about what things mean.
Yes, like. Yeah. As you get older,
it's not the easiest pitch.
Your friends become acquaintances, as we learn.
They're not really friends.
Bono's dad's friend, Mr. Sarai, shows up. And Chipmunk puts doubt into Bono's head, and then in turn puts doubt into Bono's dad's and Mr. Sarai's heads.
Well, again, it kind of shows the thing of adults are just big kids. You can put them with a kiddish existential question, and they'll be like, "No, we're totally friends. What are you talking about? Are we though?" They're just as thick as kids in many ways.
But at the same time, it ends up making their friendship better as they decide not to just stand around talking about the past and go and do new things together.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
More things fell over. Jesus. I think I've moved my chair a little too far to the right. Having said that...
That was like a linchpin or something.
Yeah, there's nothing else to knock over now. it was mainly blank CDs, don't worry about it. Okay. Yeah, it was a really... That's kind of the plot, though, wasn't it? I'm not sure, I can't remember any... Oh, there's specific jokes. There's the bits where Dad and Mr. Sarai are trying to prove that they're friends with...
Yeah, they kind of like hold hands or they put their arms around each other and they always end up wrestling at the very end.
Well, as we'll see on another show like, we'll talk about later, wrestling is the thing you friends do together.
Yeah.
That's what me and Niall will be doing when we get to Kiddicar.
Or just like shouldering each other, yeah?
Yeah.
I can feel
Yeah, fun. Nothing says good to see you, old boy, like putting your best mate in an arm bar.
Yeah, but this was a non-surreal, thoughtful Bono Bono episode.
It was hitting a bit close to home for me. Where I was like, yeah, you know, you do guess lose touch with friends over time.
Like, it did get me thinking, like, there's people that I know that I haven't met in at least a year or more. And I'm kind of thinking, it's like, yeah, but we're still, like, very close, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it was more in the sense, like, you might have people who... really hung out with, you know, maybe when you were in college or something like that, and then you meet up with them, and every meet up, you always talk about the past. It's like, oh yeah, I do know people like that, you know?
Yeah.
I know. Like, I think that's why I lean towards board games and stuff, because it is a new thing you can do with your friends, and you can be talking about that and other stuff while you're actually doing something new. I think this probably will hit closer to home with the parents watching it than the children. And then the children can ask their parents, who just didn't see it, uncomfortable questions after they have watched it. which they won't be... Well, Makaruna Akuno Gundan Episode 8 fight. The fight happens at the end. They get the job at the sushi thing.
I mean, like, it's probably the biggest cliffhanger besides their spaceship being on fire.
It is.
It's more personal.
So the stern-looking sushi chef we saw at the end of the last episode turned out to be very easy to win over. All you had to do was say, he asked, do you love sushi? We love sushi.
Yes.
You've got a job.
They responded straight away. You got to give them that. Like, they didn't think about it. It was just like, obviously. But there is a younger worker at the sushi thing who's perturbed by
He's very nice at the beginning of the episode, but by the end, they are royal.
He's had to deal with these guys for a whole episode.
Yes. They're very eager. I think it's the best you can say about them.
Yeah. But they need to listen to instructions. Like, you know, if you're going to deliver something, get the address.
Yeah.
We got pretty close, though. You got to give us that.
I like the thing of them just making the sushi and just like, oh, that's a bad one. Oh, no, that one didn't turn out okay. Yeah,
that gag that always works in any sort of food preparation comedy.
That was a practice one.
Yeah.
Kind of works in food factories as well, but you may get fired similar to this. I mean, said that well.
It's kind of like, it's sort of like how, like, you know, the shops don't sell odd-shaped fruit because, you know, if it's got a little kind of weird bump in it, people won't want to buy it, but it's probably fine to eat. And also, it's probably cheaper and tastier.
Yeah, when I worked at Terry's, you were allowed to eat off the production line.
Really?
Yeah.
What was on the production line? Was it like one
sweets,
thing?
Chocolates and jellies and things.
Jesus, that's a way to cavities.
Yeah, exactly. I think the assumption was that nobody would want to eat too much because you'd eventually get sick of it.
You'd be wrong.
Well, tell that to old Joe Jack and his position himself at the end of that conveyor belt and this bop into his maw.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, so they fight at the end is the three of them are sitting in a park discussing getting fired. Or not discussing getting fired. Like, and that's what makes...
Yeah, just like, oh, geez, we need a new job now. Oh, oof, oh, really tough. And the serious dog has gotten very upset.
Yes, he's had enough of their larks. And they get into a fight. And then some children observe them because they're sitting on some sort of play elephant.
Like an elephant slide or something, yeah.
And what do they say? That hips
there. I think it's like, oh, they're giving out to the hippo.
Yes.
Oh, dear.
And then every time the ending credits always surprise me for some reason. Some reason the rest of the episode makes me forget the end credits are stop motion claymation. Then it's always delight when it shows up.
Yeah, yeah.
Either that or my memory is going.
Could be that.
I also play it to the end too. Like, I wouldn't often sit around for the end credits doing zip and then, yeah, actually, just let this roll because it's one of the best parts of the episode. Of the week, keeping.
Now, I did put on the Slack channel that you were relieved of your pre-Chi-Chan duties, but I don't know if you noticed it or not.
I did watch it.
You did watch it, okay.
Damn it.
I didn't. No.
I did as well. Anyway, so...
Okay, I'm going to make this my last one because I can compare it to Pascal for You Know Why. It's a birthday episode.
Oh, it's a birthday episode, yes. As they're both together, I bet that was planned as well. Yeah, so this kind of firmly confirms that we are not the target audience for this show.
No.
So damn. I can enjoy it on a mechanical level.
Sure.
Of, like, observing how this type of show works. But I don't think that... I think it's not as good as, say, Chibi Devi, the last thing they did of this author's. Chibi Devi was also a lot quicker.
Yeah.
So we learned that Yuka doesn't like boys.
Because they're crass? I forget her word.
Yeah, they're going to have a flashback to this particular boy who is quite clearly this... boy.
It's the same kid, and also he was probably like crushing on you as little boys do.
Yes.
By, you know, teasing you and such. I'm not saying that makes it okay. I'm just saying that's probably what fucking happened. Then it's also he's got the same haircut. So it's probably him.
And so he sees Chi-Chan, who's come to school again. And
yeah, they like mistakes it for a doll first.
Yes. They try to play off that he's a toy, and he wants to know where you get the toy from because he thinks it's his sister's birthday. And she'd like something like that. And so Chi-Chan is just lying on the bench. He goes, oh, they're talking about me, but it's so nice to be out here in the sun. and then starts falling asleep and then starts snoring. And they're like,
I mean, that was a pretty good joke, yeah.
Yeah, it was obviously a giveaway that no, he's not a toy, and they have to sort of all come clean that he's an underground dweller. And he's like, oh, okay, as a favor, can you, I won't tell anybody, but as a favor, can you bring that to my little sister's birthday party? And so she does.
Brings that, another underground dweller and an alien.
Yes.
Because, yeah, fuck it.
And they have a good time at the party, but she's still a little cold to the boy. Because she doesn't like boys still. And they get a present. Chi-Chan leaps into the cake. Because Chi-Chan...
They turn the entire room into the cake?
Yeah, so that's at the end after they fix... That's their attempt at fixing the cake that Chi-Chan...
Yeah.
In his... Really loves attention. And loves showing off. He's trying to show off and do this jump at the end of them singing Happy Birthday. I think this is the first anime I've seen post the sorting out of the legal Happy rights Birthday.
Of... Yeah, yeah.
To actually have the proper Happy Birthday song in it.
Hmm.
And they turn the room to cake, and then he walks her home, and she like begrudgingly admits that maybe she's okay with boys a bit more than she used to be. And the aliens congratulate her on getting through this ordeal of having to talk to a boy. Yeah.
So, like, the target audience is young girls, right?
Yeah, I assume probably people who are a little bit younger than the main character.
That's what I figured. Like, it's not quite an aspirational thing, but yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of like...
In that line.
Yeah, these are things you may have to deal with, but you won't have the benefit of aliens showing up and partway and shilling you their merchandise, because that also happens in this episode.
Oh, that's right. They all have fucking walkie-talkies now, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, Jesus.
And the cake is from Chow, which is the magazine that the manga runs in.
Oh, well. Really?
So even fucking the cake hell. Is a plug.
Oh, Jesus Christ. There's more ads than I even thought there was.
But yeah, having watched Haybot and their blatant breaking.
I gotta admit, they do handle advertising very well. Because they're just going like, this is an ad. Yeah. This is literally the toy now. It's a character in the show. That's okay.
Yeah, but this was pretty blatant. Similar to when Pascal in The Perfect Plate, they got that barcode swiper thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Except
but like I said, I think you'd be more likely to buy it. Yeah.
Try to destroy the world. Anyway, on to 100%. Anyway, no more pre Chi-Chan.
Okay.
No need to cover that anymore. I may accidentally end up watching it still, but
that's fine.
Because it's still on the queue. I said that about Haybot. I was like, well, I started saying Haybot was terrible, but I probably will still watch it. And now I'm pretty sure it's one of my favorite shows of the year.
I wonder if the same thing will happen, Chi-Chan.
Probably not, no. I'll tell you what, it may be in the top 10 is 100% Teacher Pascal.
Oh, fucking hell, because I was like, am I watching the right show? I wasn't planning on watching Dragon Ball this early.
Yeah, episode 7, This Is Birthday Party and Perfect Plate, in which the kids go to Stephen Kanamori's, or Kanamori Steve.
Kanamori Steve!
His name is Kanamori Steve. I can't see correctly on that.
Yes.
What was his dad's name?
Kanamori Brad. Kanamori
Brad. Name Brad. Kanamori Brad. Hello, I'm Simon's father.
Oh, dear. Yeah, so he takes him to the thing and he's just kind of like, generally you have to dress up, and he goes on a long spiel, clock ticking away, like of everything he got for all his birthdays so far.
Yeah, and then they have a slideshow of moments of his life. Which, for some reason, Pascal shows up in every single slide.
He shows up more and more in each slide, which is great.
Which is extra funny if you've seen the trailer for It.
Mm.
And then I can't remember what sets them off.
He's shown them around the house.
Oh yeah,
and he's shown them the vault where he has all his money.
Oh yes, Pascal wants to steal all his money. That's it.
Yeah, and everyone's like, "Dude, you can't." Is that why you came?
Yes, because he hadn't been invited. He just shows up partway through the episode.
Yeah, yeah. It's only the kids from the class who've been invited. Of course, he's going to show up. But what sets him off?
I can't remember.
To go Super Saiyan.
My desire for money has awakened me.
That was it. Okay. Yeah, it's just that much.
To become a super teacher.
Yeah.
And they accidentally kill the fat kid again.
I thought he was the muscly kid.
Well, he's the big, he's the one who looks like far older than everybody else in the class.
He's been held back a few years. Yeah.
Larger. Yeah.
Pascal goes super teacher, and somehow Steve also goes super teacher?
He does, yes.
But in like, he doesn't get as muscly.
Yeah. Well, for sure, he also desires money, so he can access the power.
That's true, I guess. He wants to keep his money.
And then the best Dragon Ball joke I have ever seen, of when he says, "Everybody, lend me your small change."
And then
everyone's going, "Oh, my book money!"
Instead of shooting the spirit bomb at him, he decides, "Fuck it, this is enough money for me. I'm just going to fucking go home with this." What a dick. And his dad's super just excited that his son is having such a good time in his birthday, yes, while they fly like 60 feet into the air shooting fucking energy balls at each other. Oh dear, good stuff.
And then in perfect plate, he goes and goes to see the body sage. To get
what is it called? The token of body?
I can't remember. The body fragment. They're like fragments.
It's like a piece.
Broken into three, which turns out to be a gym membership scam.
Well, it's not like it just makes him stronger. It's like, well, obviously, you got to work out in the gym for a while. But it's super cheap. Wink, 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 wink.
Mm. works very hard. It's cool new armor and things. And it's like, all right, I'm ready. Now I'm at a higher level. I can go out and fight evil again. It's like, hang on here. Let's take a measurement. 50% body fat? I don't know about that now. But I got the new armor and the sword. Oh, you got a long way to go yet, my friend. I'm sorry.
Also, here's your bill. The gym membership is surprisingly low, but using the equipment was what he was charged for.
Yes, and per hour as well.
Yeah.
But they found one fragment, so the story's moving along.
Presumably. It's difficult to tell.
It is. The last short is Ninja Girl and Samurai Master Episode 34, The Demon and the Monster. And I can't remember what happened, except there was sword fighting.
Yeah. The guys come to attack. Where are the names? I probably didn't write them down, did I? No, it's not. I'm an idiot.
The guy who was the former lord is still. Does he get challenged by our ninja?
What's his face? The guy with the headband who hates ninjas rolls up with these guys and says, "We're going to let's see your castle." Oh, yeah, we're going to come out here and start going kill crazy and you do it, which he does. Then Chidori kind of leaps in to defend him.
And he's really impressed by her because she cuts down another guy while never taking her eyes off him. And it's kind of like, oh, fuck, I got to fight this. So his men are hauling him away, trying to get him to not say his name to give away the whole game.
Oh, yeah, and the guy who likes poems thinks he knows who the swordsman is because of the style. And he's like, oh, there's only so many people who use that style.
He was comparable to our master, that kind of thing. Yeah. He writes a cool poem about him. I think the other thing was the headband guy said, oh yeah, he said his name was this. Also, he had it written on all his things like a child. That was a good joke. What was the other bits of it?
Oh, it was like, Chidori goes up to, what's his, the other guy? What's his name again? And he was like, how do you write? What was the name of that guy? Go write on the stage. How would you write down? I challenge you to a duel. You write down at this. What are you doing? You're challenging the guy to a duel.
And this is after like your man had challenged Chidori, and he thought that he was proposing. He was getting really upset.
Swordsman is Kita Batetake Tomonori. He's the swordsman, and I can't remember. I haven't got the other guy's name down recently.
The guy who became one of the generals and everything, yeah.
Yeah, I have to write all that stuff down.
It's a lot of history to take in 4 minutes.
Normally I've been quite good, but the past three weeks I've lagged behind in getting that list updated.
See, guys are coming thick and fast, and then it's had happened very recently of this guy shows up and he may not turn up again except for about 5 seconds in an episode, but in like a few weeks from now or something like that. And then is it worth kind of researching all these guys who are only going to show up for background jokes every once in a while?
Your man who had the castle who joined all this thing, like he appeared for like a split second, all right? It is difficult to kind of keep track of him all.
We just have to remember this is also Drifter's homework.
I guess that's true. Yeah. How many of these guys? I imagine Chidori won't show up, but I could be wrong.
No, but obviously, various characters may reference them even if they don't show up.
Exactly.
They might say.
Well, see, Chidori is like a good Chidori because it doesn't show up in history at all.
Yeah.
He's just that good. Could get a good fight out of this next week because I thought it was going to happen this week. The guy kind of hints of it, so.
Yeah, maybe we'll have a few exchanged blows, but they have to retreat and everything. Yeah,
so it could be a very violent and hilarious battle next episode.
On to the full length things, starting with My Hero Academia, episode 22, Bakugou versus Araraka.
And speaking of good fights, of course, yes.
Oh, this was fun. I think top of the week for me.
Yep. It's pretty good. It's kind of like, it's a real underdog thing, but you are rooting for her. I knew how it went down again, like from reading it, but I've forgotten, you know, the kind of beats of it. So it was pretty fun to watch again.
She is on him like a fucking demon. She's in there, you know, she's getting explosions thrown right in her face, and she keeps on coming back for more.
Yeah, it's a pretty good strategy that involves, what did someone break it down as? She's running in low, so he has to explode a bunch of the stage.
He has to aim downwards, and as a result, the explosion will leave a lot of debris flying around. And
she's basically running around touching she's running so low she's touched the ground, so it all starts floating up in the air.
Yep, and that, you know, while before the smoke clears, you know, she's levitating all up into the air, and while she's kind of dodging around, almost getting blown to kingdom come all at the while, but she's like amassing a huge rock pile like in the sky. I don't know, I get that maybe. Bakugou may not have noticed that, but sure, this is about at the eye level of the people in the upper stands of the stadium.
Well, I think they're all really, they just see the rocks fly into the air, and they don't think about the fact that rock didn't come back down because this fight's so fucking intense. That's my guess, anyway. That's the only possible excuse.
And from Bakugou's point of view, is he's assuming that she's going for the tactic of trying to make him float.
Which she is, but she's this is like her plan in order to enact that plan.
Yeah,
she has a few plans on the way to doing this. Like one of it is to throw her jacket through the smoke to get him to go for that while she kind of circles around. But his reactions are so fucking crazy that doesn't work.
Yeah, yeah. So the main problem is the reason this plan does not work is because he is really—he's
ridiculous.
Yeah, he's really powerful, and also can react really quickly to changes in the battlefield.
Yeah. It's not her brilliant fucking plan. It's him being a goddamn fighting genius. Yeah.
Yeah, and as like Dick also pointed out, the longer he's fighting, the more he's sweating. So ergo, the more explosions he can make.
Yeah, you want to take him out quick because if he hasn't built up much of a sweat yet, then if he has built up a sweat, you're in trouble. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's just like he was fun, great in this one. Getting some good fucking faces out of her.
I did like loads of them. I like the crowd's reaction. It was like, boo, you beat up a girl, boo. And Eraserhead comes in and says, like, he's doing this because he's taking her fucking seriously. Like, you're professional heroes. Like, if you know, like, you can't do this shit seriously, then you need to start a new career kind of thing. And he's like, it's tough, but he's right, like, you know. Good stuff.
Yeah, I think also having went and read ahead, it's like you now reseeing the story, you start to pick up stuff that's gonna play out either comically or seriously later on.
Yeah, stuff that has an effect down the line, sure.
Yeah, because for all of Eraserhead's sensible talk throughout this tournament, there's a killer burn coming up on him later on.
Oh, fucking hell. He's a guy who needs taking down a peg sometimes.
Yes.
But yeah, Erarica does not win, and it's more so that her body fucking gives up underneath her.
Yeah, I think that's been established already, hasn't it, about how long she can use her powers for.
I think it's just like the more she uses it, generally like she can use it until she gets sick, but in this case it's like she just collapses due to fatigue.
Really? I thought it's because she's taken so many explosions to the face that her organs are probably fucking turned to liquid by now.
That would fucking put your legs in jelly as well, yeah, sure. it's just maybe it's just head trauma at that stage, who fucking knows. That thing where Midoriya is trying to comfort her, I was just like, because you know that she's breaking up inside, but she's refusing to show it.
Yeah,
that was kind of heartbreaking. And then the call with her parents
cracks up on the phone, and like I cracked up there. With her. Like, oh man,
yeah, that's fair enough.
But more importantly, Ajiro Woody's arm wrestling match.
I'm so glad that you got on the show on that.
That was sweet. I mean, like, it's kind of the limited animation thing, but it just feels just right. That and what's her name being so impressed, the S&M fucking superhero being so impressed with their manliness at the end. Good stuff.
And Tetsu going, I should have eaten more iron for breakfast this morning.
Because he was getting metal fatigue.
Yeah.
Maybe that's how he didn't win in the thing. Like, it's just like your man can take more long-term damage or something.
Yeah, I think he probably has to, like, power up each book. There's a bunch of characters who have to eat certain things for their
like powers. Like, your man Ida has to drink orange juice, isn't it? I think he's powered by orange juice or something ridiculous.
There's a guy later on whose powers are based on what he's eaten previously that day.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Midori doesn't get much in terms of fighting this episode, but he does get to do fucking two sick burns on people, and I thought that was really nice. So Bakugo's going like, oh, you gave her a plan to defeat me, huh, you piece of shit, fucking, and he's like, nah, I didn't give her nothing. That was all her making you look like an asshole. And I was like, oh no. And also he burns the guy who's on fire, which which is nice. Because Endeavor's actually being quite polite for once, like the only time I've seen him.
Well, that's because he recognizes how powerful he is, so he's going to show him respect.
Yeah, but not really showing respect to his own fucking kid. Midoriya's obviously pretty pissed about that.
Yeah. Well, it's sort of like, you know, you're saying, you're the same power as All Might, it feels like to me. And it's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm my own guy. And the same way your son isn't an asshole like you are.
Oh yeah,
but you know, but in a much more polite, polite.
Good stuff.
And then next week we get
Midoriya and
Todoroki.
That should be good.
It should be, and I think we might take two episodes to get through all that. Because a lot, if I remember correctly, a lot of the fight is a flashback.
Yeah. I think that's the only thing that will delay it, because it's been doing a really good job of like clipping through nicely.
Yeah, the next episode's title, I think it sort of refers to that they're going to flash back to
Todoroki's
background.
Mm.
Again, I've got the problem of, because I read ahead, I'm like, which things happened this week and which things are happening in future episodes?
Right.
No, like I really want this kind of crack into the comic while it's at like a reasonable stage before it kind of runs away from me. But I think at the moment I'm happy to just let at least this season of the TV show play out, and then I'll blitz into the comic and get up around.
That's fair enough. I mean, like, the volumes are well ahead of this at this stage, even if you only wanted to go that far.
Yeah, I'm enjoying this as it comes, and I feel like I would have loved reading this in the comic, but it just kind of really got me right in the heart, like, way better seeing it in motion and hearing it acted out.
Okay.
I love when a show does that. It stirs me inside, you know, and I get the tears at the corners of my eyes, you know, because I'm sad for, like, Ochako as well, but also this when she's in the middle of that fight and I'm saying, come on, girl, you can do it. You can do it. You can do it.
Yeah. And, like, the kind of thing was, I think it was, like, nearly inevitable, but that doesn't change the excitement of it. And yeah, I think that's, like, that's important, yeah.
Yeah. Like, when it's got me, like, half shot into the TV, like, I'm watching, like, the tense end of, like, a ropey game or something like that. It's like, come on, that fucker. That's good TV.
Next up, more sports. It was Tiger Mask Double, episode 33, Assassin from the Past. Which I'm sure should be Assassins from the Past, because we get...
Maybe only one of them is an assassin.
Well, yeah, only one of them is referred to as being an inheritor. Because we are introduced to Tiger the Black and the Second.
Is that one up from the third? No.
Thankfully, the reporter lady thinks to ask, okay, you got the third and the second, so what does all that mean, guys? What the hell does that mean? Well, like, I am big Tiger the Second, but, you know, I'm not really a big guy, so it didn't feel right, you know, saying I'm big Tiger. So let's go for the Second. You know,
I did like the reporters going like, he's not really that big a tiger. Son of a bitch! and he tries to strangle that dude there and then. poor Black Tiger. He doesn't really get much going in this. He's badass. I'm not fucking denying that. He just doesn't get... It's like, oh, does anyone want to ask me any questions?
He's got a quiet confidence. He's happy, you know. He's coming in here. He's here to do a job. And he's just going to stick to it. He doesn't need to feel any of
the complicated backstory. Okay.
Yeah, do you think this episode feels like the seeds of a Miss X face turn?
It
seems like her thing's been taken out from underneath her, because initially, like, Mr. X is there as well, and he's like, oh, by the way, fucking lady is my niece, and okay, lads, are we all going to do the plan? All right, cool. And they all basically leave her in the room alone. It's kind of like, yeah, you've nothing to do with this, Miss X, this is our fucking show now.
Yeah, they all start revealing their identities, and she's like, no, don't tell them you're Big Tiger the Second. Don't tell them you're Tiger the Great the Third. But they just
She wants to do the reveals and shit, but they're all playing their own game. Yeah,
I don't care. They don't care. It is definitely a sense that, you know, maybe Mr. X is thinking, you've screwed up enough times, and like Tiger Mask is still alive and still making a show of us. So I'm gonna take over this fucking circus and take him out myself with my own guys.
Yeah, that's the implication at the start when they're wrestling the Miracles. Tiger's wrestling with New Japan. And it's like, we've only got like fucking like two Miracles left. Shit.
That actually did throw me at the start of the episode. I was like, oh no, we turned face last week. They're all friends again now.
Yeah, it was a fairly quick heel turn and patching up of things, all right.
And also maybe the crowd's even though these Miracles aren't really in much good when you reduce their numbers, because that was literally their only advantage was that there was a lot of them.
We'll keep multiplying. So what?
So then they have a tag match against Tiger the Black and the Second, and Nagata said, well, we can't risk putting our top guys against them straight away, so it's going to be me, and then Ryu's going, me, pick me, Tiger Mask.
Yeah, because initially it was Tiger Mask, and Tiger Mask said, I'll do it, and then the other guy, one of their top guys,
Tanahashi
says, I'll do it as well, but he's like, no, me and Tiger Mask. Hall was left behind. Poor guy.
Well, yeah, they were just lost even worse. He probably would have died.
Yeah.
And then what would that mean for real life? Because this seems to predict events to happen wrestling, like, like in the future. So if one of them died in the ring, then that means Tanahashi has got 1 week to live.
So they have the match and they get their asses. Well, Nagata gets choked out.
Well, you knew it had to be him because Tiger Mask can't lose yet.
Yet.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, like, this isn't the match that he can lose in, is what I'm saying.
Yeah, we're kind of in the home stretch, you know, like he lost on like the the pyramid resting stage.
That was kind of like a loss where he did enough damage on the way out to actually nearly end his career, but not so much from this episode see.
Yes. So that was his loss, and then he's kind of been losing in a sense because he went over to GWN and now he's back.
Yeah.
But now we'll see everybody he loves and cares about get crushed under the heel of Tiger's Den, and that's going to just make him madder and madder until he, give him the motivation to get in there, get in the ring, and finally take out the third.
I did like the reversal on, is it Tanahashi? His white eye thing?
That's Nagata.
Oh, yeah, no, Nagata.
Nagata, sorry, I had the wrong name. He's going white eyes because he tries the armbar on Black Tiger, but it's like he's shifted his fucking center of gravity in his fucking arm or some shit. And it's like, you can do that? It's like, yes, it's a wrestling thing.
My favorite bit of the fight is where Nagata's on the
oh shit, that's the, amazing.
Side against Tiger, and all three of them turn to him. And then Ryu's got, you better, there's three tigers in the ring. Make sure
he's like, oh, right.
Tiger mask.
Well, I mean, like, he was saying, like, tag me in. I'm surprised the other two lads got confused by it. It's like, you know, we're on the other side, dude.
Well, they used to being addressed that way.
They used to being called Tiger. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so...
But, they're...
Big Tiger's kind of got, like, a technical wrestling style and...
And he's got the soft muscles so he can take the hits, whereas the other guy's got the hard muscles.
Oh, Tiger the Black's got the soft muscles. And
oh, sorry.
Big Tiger's
got
the muscle armor.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, both physiques are kind of completely protects them in wrestling logic.
Yeah, but it's also a thing of Black Tiger can get like crazy air.
Yes,
despite how fucking tall and fat he is.
He's kind of like a big Van Vader type of being a power guy and also a high flyer.
Yeah, yeah. So you know that body slam is even more damage from the top rope.
Like, I was all about this because we've been used to seeing maybe more realistic or realistic-ish matches because you have the real-world stars like in the ring. But now it's like, yeah, Yuji Nagata, he's pretty good, but he doesn't stand a chance when he's fighting a fucking anime character who can do this weird bullshit whenever he wants.
You see, weirdly...
He's going to get his head caved in.
Weirdly, I thought this match was the most, not necessarily the moves, but in the most, how it played out, the most like a real wrestling match.
It played out like a wrestling match, but the guys have superpowers that are wrestling related.
Yeah.
Yeah, which isn't unusual in a wrestling match.
Yeah, but it felt more like a proper tag match than some of the matches.
Yeah.
Maybe just because they gave it a little bit more time than they normally do.
It could be it, yeah. The pace of it felt right.
Well, like, it was just kind of breaking the pin because I always felt like, oh, they have these kind of tag match things and then, like...
Yeah.
Literally, if the first guy gets knocked down, gets pinned, it's over. It's a fucking tag match. Just go on, like, way longer than that. I know you got to put this into, like, a 20-minute episode, but, you know...
You got to have the interference in there, sure.
If we have all these guys in here, then it wouldn't be over that quickly because these things tend to run on for a while in real life.
Well, yeah. But I think the main thing is they didn't put Ryu in the match, and so they...
He would have been taken out straight away.
Yeah. And then, so Takuma has managed to convince the nurse that he can go and train at the Tiger Mask gym.
She initially thinks she can go in as well, but, you know,
no,
only
wrestlers. Only. And then they start doing their warm-ups together, which is what we were referring to earlier.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. Doing the
gentle
the hugs.
Shoulder rubs. Yeah.
Rubbing their lips together.
I did like the way I used to kind of see our guy run in to get his tiger mask when he realizes it's her Jeep.
Oh, yes.
And also him like kind of hanging back in the shadows because it's like, oh, they're a couple now, aren't they? And it's like everything she's like, oh, Takuma, you need to watch your muscles now. Don't strain yourself. He's like, oh, it's all right. I won't push myself so hard. And it's like, okay, picture that they're doing this, right? And she's his physio, okay? Because that's what it's happening. I think that's got to be the thing, right? They're not in a relationship.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone just assumes this.
Yeah, it's just people who think they're in a relationship with the two people who they think are now in a relationship.
Like, she rubs him down, but because she's a physiotherapist. That's not like it's not a sex thing, you guys.
Yeah, you try telling Kevin and Neil to that.
It's all right, Kevin. Takuma's still single. Dear. Actually, we haven't seen Kevin in this episode, have we?
Well, he was under one of the miracle masks at the start.
Oh, he would have been, one of the miracles. You're right. Yeah.
Just... Well, he was there at the practice session with the other tigers.
Yeah.
Just imagine, though, how sad he's going to be when he sees the two tigers as a tag team.
Oh, Ricky's poor evil heart.
Oh, no. That's going to put him over the edge, man.
He's already over the edge, but this is going to put him further. Yeah, sure.
I thought it was a bit rich as well when Takuma giving the phone call asking if he can train, and then Takuoka says, no Tiger's Den allowed. I thought, no Tiger's Den, dude, you're a fucking Den. Yellow Devil. What are you talking about?
You were Yellow Devil. The first Tiger was in Tiger's Den. The guy was in Tiger's Den last week.
And when Takuma's walking through the Tiger Mask gym and everything like this in GWN, which is referring to the robot.
Yeah, we don't have any wrestling robots. It's all like pressure rooms and elliptical machines.
Well, we had one robot, but then we broke it. So it's not there anymore.
Yeah, it wasn't like fucking 60 feet tall or anything. Oh, jeez. I'm surprised he has a ring there, but, I guess you'd have to have one just to train
him. Yeah, you would, yeah. I think we've seen it yet, but yes.
Yeah, because he's never been there with anyone other than the guy who's in a crutch all the time. Yeah.
And next week, I think it's 5 versus 5.
Hmm.
Well, I didn't even seem to look at the fun preview. I don't know why I did that. I usually always watch them.
That's the only way I can remember the title names.
It's the three evil tigers and the two miracles versus, I want to say, Tiger Mask. Tanahashi, and I'm not sure if Okada's in there or if it's Ryu to take the fall.
I feel like they said he's been taken out because he took damage to his ribs and the tag team.
Well, Nagata is out. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. No, he's definitely out.
But I'm saying Okada. I'm not sure if Okada's.
Oh, sorry. That. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm.
We shall see. I know Naito was the odd one that I spotted. It was like, because he's not been wanting to join in the feud. He wants to stay tranquilo.
dear.
But we'll see next week what how they get him on side. Okay, now it is time to hand over everything to Niall and Dwayne as they talk Attack on Titan, episode 34, opening.
Not much to say, really.
Mostly conversations. Angry conversations in trees.
Yeah. So Eren and Ymir have been taken by Reiner and Berthold, and they're just hanging out in this forest because they've got to wait until they can...
Wait for their arms to grow back.
Wait until they regenerate, and then they can probably get out of here.
And they're all, the lads are also saying we're going to head at night, but they're like, it's all Eren's inner monologue where he's like, okay, we probably have to leg it before night, but if like there's so many fucking titans down here, and those two guys are probably abnormals because they're acting weird.
I thought one's like the big one is kind of
sunning himself,
not shy, hiding behind a tree, and it's like, oh, that one's just been watching us all the time. It's probably very, very scared. But it's waiting for.
I'm not sure if it's the guy hiding behind the tree or the guy like sunning himself but always looking at them, which is worse.
It's like the guy lying down trying to be all like on a nonchalant going, "Dude, put it to
just a bad
lying here in the sun. I'm not minding my own business. I'm not going to eat you.
Staring at you hungrily. No. But yeah, what I did kind of like about it is like Eren's like really like, and you can he's the guy who would struggle the most. And it's like, I must suppress all of my rage, and he's not really doing a good job of it because he's just getting more and more pissed off by the lads. But we see that Reiner hasn't fucking got it together, or at least he's kind of been broken by this dual life, I guess.
Yeah, he definitely has like he's been incident. He's like believing his own cover because he starts to stone off and went, hey guys, once we get off here, we might get a promotion out of this.
I mean, like, we'll have to go to the captains about it, but I'm not going to push it. And they're like, Reiner, what the fuck are you talking about? And he's like, what? You're Titans and you kidnapped us.
You're a double agent. Do you remember this, right?
And you can see Berthold kind of freaking out because he's like, oh God, no, Reiner, come on, get it together, man. This isn't the first time he's done it, I imagine.
Yeah, he's got some like really severe kind of PTSD going on.
But it's not only, seeing people, because he starts talking about people he's seen die and he's getting really upset about it. But it's also, just having to play these two different fucking roles has messed with his head as well.
Yeah. It's pretty much that and Angry Strangers. Aaron is kind of asking questions about of Ymir about, fun. So if these guys, these guys are the Colossal Titan, Armored Titan, better be so, and if they're the bosses of this thing, then who is? And Ymir is about to say, and it's like, and then Ryder cuts in, well, hang on now, Ymir.
Now, if I can't join up with us,
Now, they got that nice little friend of yours, Krista, aka Historia. Oh, but shame something that happened to her, right? But all these titans running around.
It's not even that they're threatening her. They're saying that who's to say we're not also interested in keeping her safe? Yeah. Which is very – it's not threatening. Should I call her Krista or Historia at this stage?
Yeah, Krista, whatever you want.
Okay, I'll go with Krista. It's not that they're threatening Krista. They're saying like they might also have a vested interest in keeping her alive. That's what they're suggesting, whether he's bullshitting or not. Who fucking knows?
Yeah, like Ymir seems to be whatever her purpose is to protect Krista. It doesn't really matter who that is, as long as she is kept safe.
Yeah, exactly.
As well as probably saying, as far as our current situation goes, it probably would make more sense to go with these guys since I'm already here with me, and I'm probably going to get in a ton of trouble if I try and go back to humanity now. So I may as well just go along with this.
And Reiner makes some mention of that. It's like the world is fucked or something anyway. I forget exactly what way he put it. Everybody's doomed anyway. So it's like, and he says this to Ymir, she knows what it is as well. And obviously this is just making him more pissed off.
Yeah.
Just gets more and more shouty. His arms have grown mostly back by that stage, but
Yeah. Getting a lot of the kind of Aaron, he already has those kind of pretty intense kind of green eyes, but we're getting lots of shots of those, they're wide open. You can peer right into the abyss at the center of them, and he's just on the lines of, when I get out of here, I'm going to fucking cut you all into tiny little pieces.
Yeah, I think he says it's like, I got to make sure that you guys die in the most painful way possible.
I will torture you and you will die in prison. it's like,
Meantime, the scouts are catching up.
Yeah, then they show up and they've caught up with them, and then we'll see what that plays on that. Not a lot will happen. It's just the guys talking in the trees. We're getting a few little things revealed a bit. The drama helped carry it a bit, especially Reiner's fucking breakdown in the middle of it.
I thought it was interesting to kind of, keep the monologue just to Aaron, or the internal monologue, because he's basically trying to work his way out of it and suppress his emotions, failing to do that, getting too involved in it. But you can see Ymir is hanging back and just letting the information kind of fall out of them.
Yeah.
Aaron is like, I don't know if she's on my side, but in this case, it's kind of us two against them.
Yeah.
Whereas they managed to turn her around on it. Yeah.
But as well, he was monologue because, everybody else except him knows a lot more about what's going on in the world.
So it was kind of interesting to kind of keep it from his point of view because, he knows the least, and he's also not the least invested in finding out, but not very good at just listening,
Yeah. From what I understand, this was only one chapter in the comic altogether.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm. It kind of feels that, these are probably massively long text boxes.
Okay.
Hanging up all these things. I haven't read it, but that's the kind of impression I get.
Yeah. I thought it was, I figured it was lengthened a bit, but, not like filled in, not filler, but it feels like it that we just have a lot of shit to talk about right now.
Yeah, well, it'll kick up again next week anyway. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe you need a little bit of a cool down, after you dropped a massive bomb a few episodes ago. So
yeah, that's fair enough.
Okay, my turn to talk about things you two don't watch. Hey, bots. this week was episode 34, The Call of Innsmouth Beach, which I think had more Lovecraftian references than most adaptations of Lovecraft works do.
Like, was it adapting several different Lovecraft things?
Yeah, it was mainly Shadows Over Innsmouth it was referencing.
Right, yeah, with the name, yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it was also the return of the Murakami parody character, he'd come to the Screw Island in search of a parody of the protagonist out of Shadow Over Innsmouth. He even had the Innsmouth look of beginning to look like a fish, the guy he was looking for. And so they get the Vocal Remains, who are doing their Sherlock Holmes parody again, except part of the way through the Dr. Watson and the, I can't remember the name of Sherlock Holmes' housekeeper.
Oh, Mrs.
Hudson?
That's it,
I think
yes.
It's Hudson, yeah.
Yeah, they decide to switch which detectives they're going to be because they're tired of just being wrong all the time compared to Sherlock Holmes. And they become I can't remember the detective's name. There was like two shows about them in the future in the same season running it this year. Anyway, the Edikawa Rampo detective. And his they switch into. Anyway, that's just a side joke, because most of it is just Lovecraft references one after another. So the thing is, Avokabot had gone missing as well, so they all go to Innsmouth, and they find various people with fish hats on, and in order to get to Innsmouth, they have to take the cat bus, but because it's a Lovecraftian cat bus, it's a fish, but it still says meow. It still makes the cat bus's meow noise. Then the daughter shows up of the Murakami character who's shown up once before, and she hires Neji's brother and Peket to go looking for her father, because she's like, he's in trouble, should be looking for this guy. And there's references to an author, H.P. Habocraft.
Right.
And it turns out to be all the plan of the older brother of the shady robot from a few episodes ago, who was trying to summon Cthulhu by getting 30 of the tiger screws and 30 of the sheep screws and the broken prototype of the shady screw, that they managed to prevent it happening, and then they do it themselves anyway. And Cthulhu, there's a running joke of people can't pronounce Cthulhu apart from the one of the Vocal Remains who vomits all the time. He's the only one who can pronounce Cthulhu correctly because he vomits at the end of it. And that's
the correct pronunciation.
Yes.
That does make a kind of sense.
And so Cthulhu gives him a big thumbs up and and says he'll grant the wish. And then, of course, Neji just butts in with the wish. And he wants screws. Which leads them to how the episode started, because at the start it says, I was dreaming a dumb dream that we were all screws. And it turns out at the end, Cthulhu had turned them all into screws. And I'm sure that'll all be reset next episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, there's loads of also, I'm sure this is a reference to something that isn't Cthulhu related, but Murakami's daughter is also a robot of light, the opposite of the shady robots, which apparently this was inserted into humanity's genes back when they were mice, the ability to turn into angels of light.
Well, hang on. Okay, right. I'll just roll with it.
Okay.
Which I'm sure the inserting something into humanity's genes before they were humans is a nagging reference that is itching on my brain, like all the ones from last week.
That does sound like a thing, yeah.
I've heard of things like that.
Yeah, I mean, again, as I mentioned, just have to wait till that particular guy on Nico Video, I assume he's a guy, because it seems like women would have better things on their time to do than make Haybot annotations. but there is somebody who's annotating Haybot on Nico Video. So hopefully, because there's, like I say, there's loads and loads of stuff I'm missing. And there's stuff I've not mentioned yet. There was like a Castle Cagliostro reference in here as well. Just like a throwaway, nothing even part of the plot. Let's just cut away to a scene from Castle Cagliostro with all the Haybot characters in it. And I have also now found on Twitter, like, Japanese people who are also wondering who this is for. Because they're like, children aren't going to get all these Lovecraftian references, but maybe scared by them. Because at one point, a character just turns directly into the camera and goes, "Tekalili, tekalili."
Start them young, that's what I say.
Yeah. I've now figured out my favourite Haybot writers as well, none of which are the main writer.
what an odd favorite thing to have. Favorite Haybot writers. Most of them have like a favorite film or a favorite album, but you got favorite Haybot writers.
My number one, no, sorry, I'm going to go for number three. Number three is Tatsuto Higuchi, who is best known for writing Cross Ange.
Oh boy.
Number two is Shuichi Kamiyama, who is the author of the Blue Submarine number 6 and Last Exile novels.
I like those things.
And has also written a load of stuff for OLM, I think. And then number one is Atsushi Oka, who is the guy who did the episode with the Scott Pilgrim reference, but also, I'd missed before, he was the main writer on Oji-san and Marshmallow.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I think you mentioned that before about this.
Yeah, so none of those are the main writer. I don't think the main writer is the worst. I think there's one particular writer whoever wrote the episode with the Japanese comedians and where somebody in Japan says, "I don't know how Westerners are going to understand this episode." So maybe at least he's worse for me because he's probably the hardest.
Well, he did admit it to you, Brian.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I think there's still been episodes I like of his. I think looking back, episode 3 is where it hooked me. I think if episode 3 had been as bad as episodes 1 and 2, I'd have been out. But I think it was a different writer in episode 3, and then the fluctuations have eased out as probably I've become attuned to its nonsense. But I am wondering if he's going to do a really hard turn as it goes into the last 13 episodes. Of becoming more serious.
Well, as serious as this gets anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, because every time they lean into the seriousness, the characters who were formerly appeared to be serious are dragged into the insanity.
The silliness, yeah.
Yeah, which does also appear to be a plot point not from this episode, but from earlier episodes. I think last week's episode mentioned that they're in some sort of library. And this is one particular level which is set to absurd gags.
Okay.
And I think they're trying to preserve that, the good guys behind the scenes.
There's some sort of dial existing in the universe.
Possibly, yes.
They could switch it to serious.
Yes.
But nobody wants to.
Yeah, it's...
I say dial, it's probably a fucking screw.
It's going to be a fucking screw. Of course it's a screw. Everything's a screw in this universe.
Dear.
Lefty seriously, righty funny. I don't know.
But it's been a while since they've gone back to the person who now seems to be the villain. So, and we've still not seen the mum at all, even though she's been in the credits now for a good couple of months. Anyway, on to things we've all watched, but probably also slightly absurd. Dragon Ball Super, episode 92. Emergency development, the incomplete 10 members. Again, this is a scattershot episode as we hop around various places.
I think hopping around is better because they say like there's like 3 hours till the tournament, but the hopping around makes the pace feel a bit better for some reason.
So I think
at least hopping between the universes anyway.
Yeah. This episode we've got Universe 7, obviously a good deal of that. Universe 3. As they go and see this guy, he's like a cyborg stingray man.
Yeah, and he's like the most advanced thing they have, and he's obviously a scientist as well.
Yes.
You know, the Dr. Darrow type situation. Yeah. So he's making like robots specifically that won't. The one he shows off is like the one that. Here's the many ways in which this can't possibly fall off the stage. And I was just like.
A strong grip.
Can it fight? That's very important. In this
Does claws seem pretty nasty if they dug into you? So
it was hard. His arm got ripped off.
Yeah, exactly.
Ah, what is he? Now going to get hero destruction cups to come out of the back. How about that?
Pretty good. Can I punch? Can I throw a punch?
Since we threw all this stuff, it looks like the most, like, the fun, goofiest movements you can think of in the Raw being, yes, this will work, and robot God Destruction is just going, boop, 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 boop. The God Destruction says, what else can I do?
Yeah, he doesn't seem too impressed. Or maybe it's hard to tell when he just beeps and lights up like an R2-D2.
But he does seem pretty good at going like, yes, this will work.
Their opposite number appears to be still making their fucking dance video. I guess it's only been like a few hours. It might be just a live stream of them dancing on GodTube.
And then we get a good deal of Universe 6 as well, with Cabba and Cauliflower and Kale.
Kale, yeah, that was it. Brilliant. He's shown her how to be Super Saiyan, and like he's trying to insult her, but he's really polite about it. He's like, I'm trying to get you mad so you could go Super Saiyan. Alright, just concentrate on this point in your back. And she's like, alright, why don't you say so? Blah, turn Super Saiyan.
Mm. It's kind of nice to kind of have just explain, you know, like what does this sensation feel like, you know? It's actually quite different from this kind of shouting, yelling. You gotta, like, you know, shout and yell, but also kind of focus a lot in your upper back. It's like, oh, okay.
Yeah, because once she does it the first time, she's kind of a bit exhausted. But it's like, now that you got a feel for it, you can probably just focus on your back, and like I do. And she's like, oh yeah, I can do that now. Whoop! And she just like takes to it straight away. So yeah, you can see she's the battle genius, as her brother was saying.
Yeah, and then she wants her protege, Kale, to have a go as well.
But she seems super nervous.
Yes, but we've seen her in the opening credits, so we know that she's going to do it, and she's the one who turns into the legendary Super Saiyan.
But
not
yet,
not this episode.
No.
Yeah. And so I'm thinking, like, you know, it's, if I sound like Shampoo's girl, just load the fucking bases with Super Saiyans, and then they'll just club together Super Saiyan God and fucking beat face about the whole ring.
Yeah, I'm kind of on, I hate to say it, but I am kind of on Beerus's side here, where he's kind of like, why is everyone on this fucking team from Earth? That's a big fucking universe, guys.
Because Goku has killed everybody else in the universe.
That's true. Yeah, he
gives them an idea.
Just crazy enough to work? I don't know about that. But yeah, I did like now, Goku going to meet Mr. Satan, who's explaining that generally he only needs to sleep for like a second and he's grand, but this is one of his 2-month-long sleeps. Did they do that? And get Vegeta to break the fucking room again so they couldn't just throw him in the room. Yeah,
I thought
the
exact same thing. Yeah.
I was thinking, like, because that's the solution. Throw him in there for like 5 minutes. He'll be out and he'll be have his full rest.
They've second guessed you.
Yeah, I figured as much. Like, Vegeta just ruining shit accidentally.
But the best bit is Mr. Satan going, well, I guess I'll have to take part in the tournament.
And initially, like, it's kind of like the thing where he shows a slight amount of heroism and Goku's like, you saw what the fucking guys did in that last tournament. You get fucked up. And Mr. Satan's just there sweating. He's like, yes, I suppose I would die.
Even his shoe starts sweating. That's how nervous he is.
Yeah. I appreciate him stepping up to the plate, at least.
Well, they have to
more
come
than fucking Yamcha's done. Yeah.
Yeah, they come clean to Krillin. And
oh, yeah, because himself and Tiener's like, wait, there's no money?
This is bullshit.
Dear.
Yeah, and they try and make Bulma pay, and then eventually Bulma agrees to pay.
Yeah, I'll pay anyone who wants paying. I basically have infinite money.
Krillin is going, Goku, like, we're fun best friend. If you just found Tommy, the universe was going to be destroyed, I wouldn't have done it. Or of course, well, but Krillin, if I told you, then you would have dropped out. I said, yeah, I am, and I will. But if you just kind of told me about it, maybe you could have seen this way. And then Beerus was kind
of... He's trying to get him to, like, apologize, basically. Yeah, yeah.
Listen, Baldy, get on the team or I'll fucking kill you, okay?
I'll destroy you right now. He's like, all right, fine. I thought I was trying to be all cool about it, but okay.
Well, I was like, I wish I could have joined, come back in the team in a cooler fashion than that.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, that was a great bit of writing. And that was great Beerus writing. built.
Yeah, he's really panicking now. Yeah. It's coming down to the wire, and the we had it sorted, and it's all gotten fucked.
They're like, "Oh, we just take 9," and they go, "Well, no, if you haven't got 10, you may just destroy you there and then."
Yeah, you should probably bring Mr. Satan in that case anyway. It doesn't matter.
Then, of course, we're thinking Universe 9 are in deep shit.
Well, you think they're just going to show up with the 3 dogs?
Either that or like 7 Ooh. Guys they've brought along who
are not so great.
Yeah.
Mm. Oh, dear. Oh, I did like the bit with Toppo finally meeting up with the captain or general.
Is he general?
Yeah, because when he was like, oh my God, I've never seen Toppo in person, and he pats the kids on the heads, and I realized he patted them both on the head at the same time with his massive fucking
hand. One hand. I'm now going to see how the kitten trapped in the electrical cables turned out.
Yeah, yeah. It's all
for the best.
Good. It turned out okay. Now to save the entire fucking universe. And your man's panicking. He's like, well, while we're gone for an hour, what if the
One universe hour.
Gets attacked? I'm like, it'll be destroyed if we fucking don't, dude. It's like, well, the rookies, I don't know if the rookies are up to it. It's like, doesn't fucking matter. We'll be gone an hour. It'll be fine.
We're like a massive military space force. We've got plenty of guys who can hold it down while we're away.
More than 10 guys. It's fine.
Well, the other thing I was thinking of is like, how much crime is there in their universe that requires them to be there?
It seems pretty nice. Like, you see all those animal people just walking down the street having a good time. Yeah, it's probably fine.
Well, it's like, if they weren't there, that kitten would have been electrocuted.
Yeah.
He was just gone for an hour. Now, in that hour, how many kids' pets could die in some kind of freak accident?
How many kids' pets died while he was trying to save that one cat?
They are like the
What's
best.
The point of, what's the point of saving the universe if I can't save one kitten?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I don't see any more Dragon Ball alignment charts without that guy in the lawful good color.
Yeah, I think that is the best universe that we've seen, yeah?
Yeah, I think they're the nicest people.
The city seems nice. They all seem really good. They're all genuinely decent. Unless the freaking purple Captain Picard guy turns out to be actually evil.
Seems unlikely.
It seems unlikely based off everything else we've seen. I don't think this is a Frost situation. Yeah.
We've kind of seen how Goku was, everyone saying, like, he just gets caught in the lie and then just backpedals so furiously to Garba.
Oh, well, it's okay.
Like, Bulma, you got lots of money. You can give him, like, no.
But initially, he says, you pay it. And it's like, dude, you do not have fucking 10 million zenny. You're a farmer, for fuck's sake.
When you lie to us and then you try to fund this trial, just buy us off with some money, what kind of person are you?
I'm pretty sure the incentive of if we don't win this, we'll fucking die is a pretty good incentive, right? I mean, that's the incentive Beerus gives them, but you know. Oh, yes, the plan.
The plan, yes. Well,
just get Frieza.
Wait a minute. We kill. Yeah, Beerus blames him for like killing all of Frieza's army, which had the most powerful people in the universe. And he's like, Goku's like, we could just get Frieza. Of course.
They all do the whole kind of sitcom thing, almost like all talk to the camera. But Frieza. What?
And then we cut to him in hell.
Hell, in heaven, wherever he is incarcerated.
Yes. What was it called again? Eternal Losers.
Oh, the dub version where they changed it. Home for Infinite Losers, yes.
Infinite Losers, that's it. Yeah. Yep, he's tied up to a cherry blossom tree. Or in a pupa or something?
Yes, that's what he is, yeah. He's put in a pupa and the cherubs come and sing to him.
Oh, man. He'd hate that.
Yes. And then, so apparently, next week, they're going to have to do a deal with him to get him to come back from the dead, or possibly just come back as some sort of ghost. I don't know.
Or, yeah, get a day pass, that kind of thing. Yeah. I mean, they only need him for an hour, so. No,
they can do that because in Dragon Ball Z, when Goku got Goku died in that, yeah. You got a day pass like to attend the World Martial Arts Tournament.
Yeah, so. That's what I mean. You can get it. I mean, like, I'm pretty sure they'll give you a day pass to save the entire universe, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, what's his face? Baba can bring out dead guys because, like, years and years ago, she got Goku's granddad to come out and fight him.
Yeah. And there's a few different Dragon Ball ways.
And the more obscure the reference, the more likely it's going to be the way they do it in this show.
I mean, the easiest way is just to get the Dragon Balls and wish him back to life.
Which can be done. Goku and just teleport around and just get them all in 15 minutes.
We've seen him do it already, so yeah.
I'd rather just do a
really obscure way, sure.
Because then that would be this way feels like he'll stay dead after this is done. We don't have to kill him again.
They probably will.
At the same time, I would like to see Shenlong's response at that wish.
Really? That guy? That seems like a really bad idea, guys.
And then Beerus could bully him. Boss again. Yeah.
Do you think they've written Boo out of it then? Is that it for him?
I don't know whether there's going to be some sort of twist or what it is.
I wouldn't mind. I'm kind of enjoying the twistiness of it.
I will laugh if the credits suddenly change where everywhere it was Boo, it's suddenly Freezer.
Just edited it out like a fucking Stalinist picture. Yeah.
I suppose they just don't want him changing people into chocolate or whatever he could do.
Well, he can't kill anyone.
That's true.
So, I don't think he's allowed to change people.
Well, you could turn him into chocolate and then hurl him over the edge.
Do you think Boo can throw away?
That's true, yes. I don't think
that's going to happen.
Yeah.
How is Freezer going to feel about this if you can't kill anybody?
That's true as well, yeah.
Well, I suppose you can just kneecap him because he's all about that. That's not killing them, it's just maiming them for life.
Yeah, he doesn't aim. Oh, dear. Right. I'm wondering if there's going to be some twist with this stage, because every time they cut back to the stage, I was like, this seems bigger and bigger each time.
Could be. Finally, Rage of Bahamut, Virgin Soul, Episode 8, The Day of Defeat. In which we have a really good three-way sword fight to open everything up.
A fucking sweet one, yeah. Like, two guys trying to murder each other and one guy trying to stop everyone from fighting.
I wish it had gone a little bit longer.
Right? It had some good beats to it, though.
Yeah, it kind of got the characters across as well as just being a cross fight.
Yeah, it was the style in which they fought.
Yeah, and I like the fact he was Kaiser is better at sword fighting than both these guys because he beats both of them.
Yeah, he's a sword fighter. He can actually just stick himself in the middle of this. And even when one of them kind of turns on him and shit, it's like he totally makes the king look like a punk.
Yes.
It's like, dude, I got a metal arm. What are you going to do about it?
Yeah, as I saw this one, punched him right in the solar plexus, you know, that anime scene where you do that and then they fall unconscious.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, like, it was the metal arm he punched him at, wasn't it?
Yes, it was, yeah. Because this was able to happen because your kid had appeared.
And switched off all the black armor knights, whatever weird anti-god power they have. Yes, yeah.
But then Kaiser is able to be captured because the angels come along and capture her.
Yeah, they were just waiting for... they gave the kid a different name, not Moguru.
L,
okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So they have her, or him, I'm still not sure at this stage, all in some sort of CGI kind of chains thing.
Yeah, Nina shows up, she gets arrested as well.
She gets arrested for being there, because your man says, hey, turn into a dragon! And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. The way she comes across is like, no, I can't. And it was just like, so she didn't really do anything. But because he said that, it's like, well, she's probably the dragon. Let's arrest her. That seems like a good thing to do to a dragon.
Yeah. It took an awfully long time with that as well. She's kind of,
she's trying to find hot boys around.
Coach around outside. It's like, I'm saying, no, can't do it. It went on a bit too long than I would have liked.
Yeah. I think it was probably to get the hopelessness and the defeat of it across. But yeah.
I suppose it didn't.
I get you.
I didn't really pick up on that really. Well, I read up on it, but I didn't really didn't really land for me, I suppose.
Okay.
So then they have their
Captain
trial.
Irons and...
Yeah.
Yeah. The The trial is initially like, this is fucking bullshit. They're getting fucking railroaded here. And then, like, kind of like as a thing of like, hey, how about you guys, like, let me off? And then it turns into an impassioned speech by Nina. And everyone's going like, can she fucking say that?
Well,
because like, everyone knows it's the truth. Like,
yeah.
You know.
Well, yeah, the guys outside are like, surely something's wrong. You can't have arrested Nina. It was surely some mistake.
Yeah, I had her up on my shoulders yesterday to see the parade. She's a lovely young girl.
Yes.
Very quiet, kept to herself.
Yeah, I mean, like, they're all like, wow, how far the Angolan, or whatever they're called, knights have fallen. But it's like, Nina? Oh, she's great. What are you talking about? There's no way she'd do crimes and be a dragon.
Yeah, Bacchus and Hansa have also been arrested by Heaven.
Yeah, so they're in Heaven jail?
Looks like it, yes.
Is that way?
Hmm. Trapped behind some portals or something, and the duck's trying to talk his way out of it, but it's not really working.
No. Well, just Bacchus is just being honorary.
The only thing that perks him up is that when they mention they mentioned Nina or something? They mentioned some mood of hers or something that she was okay or something like that, and he was like, oh, good. That's the only thing that kind of makes him come out of his obstinate, just lying down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You mentioned her plan to, what was it, make people believe in angels again.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we learn for sure that it's Jean's child. I won't say boy or girl, because at this point it could be.
It's not entirely clear. It could be both. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're part angel.
Who's to say you couldn't be two genders? Why not? But
Rita's kind of like, oh, what have you got yourselves into now?
Yeah, she's kind of wondering. I was like, huh, I guess everyone's been arrested but me.
Zazzle's getting tortured, and the king finds out that Zazzle didn't know exactly what.
Yeah, he just knew
Muguro was.
It's not even like he was using Muguro as a weapon. He was just wanted to keep Muguro safe.
Yeah.
And
yeah, Nina's taken, they're both, and Nina and Kaiser are taken to this dungeon on an island.
So it's hard to escape. She's taken to like the women's prison section, where she sees Jean d'Arc.
Yes, handily placed exactly opposite another main character, which is exactly what happens to Kaiser as well.
So it's not that coincidental, it's just how the universe works.
Mm-hmm. And we find out where Favreau has been. In prison.
Yeah, he's actually been in the town all this time.
I guess that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. And next week's episode is called Same Old, Same Old. So I'm guessing they have to break themselves out of jail.
They'll break out of jail. Neither of Favreau.
Has she stopped having super strength at any stage? I mean, like, she does get taken out in the back of the head with a... like a butt of a
sword.
But I mean, like, I think that was just more so her, but she's giving out the entire time she's arrested, so
yeah.
She'll get out of there, she'll figure it out. Or maybe now, maybe not now, Favreau is in the mix, he might maybe his old Favreau finesse to finagle away to get out of there. Now he's got a reason to.
Yeah, I think the only flaw with this episode for me is it didn't have as much comedy, and it couldn't really, because, you know, it's a day of defeat. It's the Empire Strikes Back. You know, you got to have the low point before you hit the high again.
That high being after the credits run and the other main character shows up.
Yeah, that's kind of to show you that it's like, oh yeah, it's going to be okay.
And his character design is pretty great. It's like, how long has he been in this jail for? Because he's got a huge beard and a huge head of hair.
Massive.
He might have just grown it out.
Yeah. Well, he always had big hair.
That is true, but this looked...
The beard, isn't it?
Yeah, quite a bit of grey.
Yeah. And if you like Nina's weird faces, you're going to love Favreau's, because he was the fucking OG weird face guy. In this.
Excellent.
Yes, I also learned that the king wanted to kill L, because that was like the one thing which can stop whatever this weird power that he's... knights have got.
So when
he also wants to stop Jean praying. That's the other thing.
Yeah.
So So it's like,
yeah, I wonder if her like faith, I mean, like probably a couple of other people's faith, is keeping the gods alive. Because the gods are saying, with this new power, we can defeat the humans and people will start praying at us again.
Yeah.
Yeah, so is that part of their thing?
I don't know. We shall see. Quite clearly, the gods are also up to no good.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Is the king the guy that Nina fell in love with? Because I'm questioning that after the way he was with her at the trial. You know what I mean?
They gave him pause because he did know her, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but I also
feel like there's something else going on there. Yeah.
Yeah, I wonder if he thinks she's the Red Dragon and he's also trying to get that power.
That's possible, yeah. I can't quite figure out I feel like there's something else going unspoken, but yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure the dragonness is important, being this is Rage of Bahamut.
Sure.
yeah, who knows? Maybe Bahamut himself will also be a plot twist later on.
I mean, like, one of the things I have in mind is that it's her dad. So that's not outside the realm of possibility, right?
We shall see. Yeah. Also, this episode was kind of like, oh, who is the virgin soul in the title? Actually, because up to this point, I was like, oh, it's Nina. But
yeah, I was thinking it was Nina as well.
Oh,
well is it L or is
it apply to a lot
John
of these characters? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Innocence lost, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
It could have applied to a lot of people.
Yeah. I suspect it may also apply to Kaiser.
Yeah, kind of. He got everything he wanted and it's shit. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, I really enjoyed this. I think, unlike Niall, I think this was my favourite over My Hero Academia.
Okay.
Mm. I just really, I think it was really like the sword fight at the start. I like the speech Nina did, sort of cutting the king down to size, to the point that, like, the advisors are almost, like, it's not so much
They're wincing as if they're going to get hit by this.
Yeah, so wincing as if they know that's the truth as well.
Exactly.
And they're upset that somebody's voiced it rather than somebody saying something they disagree with.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, the Favreau reveal after the credits.
It's got a lot of good points in it. I think the only thing about it that did bug me is the lack of, I guess, sheer joy that has been in many other episodes.
True, true, true. But,
yeah. It was still good. But I thought just why here at Academia District just stirred me inside a lot more than this.
Yeah, that's fair.
Righty-ho, that's it for this week. But let's find out what's coming up on this week's Secret of the Sailor Madness and Dynamite in the Brain.
Coming up, we have a late edition, but a welcome one all the same. We've talked about René Laloux before, you did Fantastic Planet, aka Le Planet Sauvage, but we're going for his 1988 sci-fi film, Gandahar, Light Years. Should be fun, should be trippy. Looking forward to it.
Yep.
Okay, coming up on Dynamite in the Brain is episode 250. In which me and Anthony are going to review all the episode 250s that are on Crunchyroll. So check that out. We're leaping straight in, even if we've not seen much of the series before.
I'm pretty sure like that's a good jumping on point for everything, right?
I doubt it. We'll find out.
Each one just happens to be a big recap episode, so you're all caught up.
Excellent.
Yeah, and some of those 250s are a longer time ago than I thought. But so I may also be feeling old during that episode. Anyway, that is everything. We'll be back next week. Goodbye.
Bye.
Adios.